Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free, or there'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast.
Welcome to Celtic Underground, where we're previewing the derby at Ibrox on Sunday with heavy hearts. And we need to hope this is the storm after the becalming in Kazakhstan. But I do have my doubts because, as I say, Celtic couldn't beat bloody 39th nation-ranked team. Then, really, I don't know. I don't know where it goes from here, especially at Ibrox, where they've got a not to put too fine a point in that, a piss-poor record. I make it two scrawny wins in the last eight visits. Is everybody with me there, Matthew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a great myth. I think that we went through a spell for a while, especially, you know, under Rodgers' first time, where, you know, it just felt like you battered them every game. But actually, yeah, I mean, the one I always talk about in particular is which isn't relevant directly just now, but is the New Year record. You know, we've got an absolutely dreadful record at New Year. But then we always have done. I mean, I was doing some stuff. Obviously, this coming January is anniversary, the 55th anniversary of it's the anniversary of the Ibrox disaster. In fact, it is the 55th, anniversary of the Ibrox disaster. And I hadn't actually realised till I'd read it, but when Celtic went to Ibrox on the day of what became the disaster, they hadn't won at Ibrox at that time of the year for half a century. You know, so there's this great myth that sometimes, the number of fans I meet who sort of say to me, oh, we're going to batter them on Sunday. I mean, admittedly, that's a bit less after Celtic's midweek performance, but it always surprises me how many people think that. So the record's not great. They, though, are in, you know, we can complain all we like, but, you know, they are very much in dire straits. I think if we go 1-0 up on Sunday, I beg your pardon, I think it's just going to be absolutely chaos.
Yeah, and to add more damning statistics, Celtic have only beaten Rangers once inside 90 minutes in the team's last five meetings. They've taken 4 points from the last four league meetings, whereas a certain St Mirren have taken 8 points in the same span of game. Stevie, what's your thoughts?
What concerns me is that if you're looking at it statistically, as Matthew was saying there, the last four games against Rangers, we've lost the first goal and it set us back. Now, obviously in the League Cup final, we overcame that and it was an exciting game that went to penalties. But Just when he said there, or one of you said there, if he scored the first goal, it's going to put so much pressure on them. So really, that's what we're looking for. Take the initiative, go right in there and do the business. In terms of the actual result, we've got a free hit here. We're 6 points in front. So the worst thing that can happen to us on Sunday is that we're 3 points in front of them. So I don't want it to be like that. If you ask me right now, my prediction would be that it's two bad lots and both of them would be very satisfied with a draw. Russell Martin, I think, would bite your hand off for a draw right now. And I think Brendan Rodgers, given what happened last week as well, it wouldn't be the worst result in the world, and it would let the two of us stumble on into the European games that we're going to face. So, yeah, we need to take the initiative, and I think the first goal's huge on Sunday.
Ross, do you see it that way too?
I'll be amazed if we see a game of football break out on Sunday, to be honest, but Matthew said I'm never overly confident about derby games ever. I kind of just see it as you won't find out until the first few minutes as to who's turned up. One of my biggest gripes at the moment is we are going through a period of not just weeks, but months of starting games really poorly, really slowly. So even games where we've ended up winning convincingly, there's been a lot of them where the first 15, 20 minutes, we have done very, very little. They are going to, I think it'll be two very nervous teams. And I think it'll be whoever comes out of that first 10, 15 minutes feeling a wee bit bigger, a wee bit more confident, getting your first pass right, you know, getting your press right, all these things will decide who wins it. But I am not expecting to watch the greatest football game in the world by any stretch of imagination.
Plenty of them aren't very good, but you get any kind of notion about why that's happening now at Celtic, Ross? Just to come back to you, because you've raised it, that they're starting these games and it's 15, 20 minutes, we feel their way into the games.
I suppose you could look at things like the motivational factors leading into games. You know, there's no excuse for players with certain games. I don't want to hark back to what went on this week or the week before with Kyra, but if you can't be motivated going into a game like that where you can then enter the Champions League, or if you can't motivate yourself and, you know, the cup final was a slow start, if you can't motivate yourself to go to Ibrox and try to put one up on them, there's a problem. So how do you solve it? You know, you asked me, I think the last pod we were on, or someone had asked the question about, do we need a change in maybe in the coaching? Maybe does there need to be a different voice? Does there need to be someone who has that different attitude? I've always said that. I think a lot of our coaches and Rodgers have got a very calm, very, you know, they're driven people, clearly, but it's a very one-level sort of persona. It's very chilled. So, is there a Tommy Burns? Is there a Tommy Burns who has that sort of absolute pure passion that players can kind of grasp hold of? Another part is it's on players as well. You know, I always refer back to the Michael Jordan Last Dance thing, where in his head he'd go, that guy said something nasty about me, so I am going to absolutely muller him for an entire basketball match. Players need to find whatever it is within themselves to go on that pitch and perform. They can't wait for an incident 15, 20 minutes in. They can't just, you know, mosey on in as if they've just got out of bed. This is Ibrox. It's, you know, the atmosphere is probably going to be fairly toxic for the fact that Rangers fans are upset with their manager and for the fact that it's a derby game. So, you know, it shouldn't be people like us telling them that that should be a motivational factor. They should know that one themselves. So hopefully they will find that between now and Sunday.
Yeah, you would like to think there would be some kind of reaction, Matthew, to what went on in midweek. And there was a great piece, I felt, strangely enough, from Paul Lambert, who's no one of the great kind of thinkers of our age, I would normally say, but he was talking about the atmosphere around Celtic and whether, obviously, the squad hasn't been properly prepared for the season ahead. It might be changing now in the next couple of days, but as it stood then, certain key positions hadn't been addressed. But he said, you have that on one side, and you have even whatever the manager's telling you is part two of what goes into a mix about how a player performs. He said, but the biggest part for any player should be, can I look myself in the mirror? Will I be able to look myself in the mirror, how I'm playing in this game? And I mean, what Celtic players could look themselves in the mirror after Tuesday night against Carra and say, you know, well, I did my bit. It was like we didn't have proper wingers. We didn't have a striker you could really hang your hat on. But I did my bit.
Okay, I think for Sunday, I think it's reasonable that the players owe a better performance. I mean, I suppose, though, to some extent, that's also irrelevant because, you know, by that logic, then Rangers supporters could say an absolutely identical thing, you know, that just as the Celtic team should be looking at themselves and going, I owe the fans something, then, you know, ultimately, by that logic, Rangers supporters can do it. I don't really think that's directly relevant. What I hope, and Ross sort of alluded to it, something we spoke about on the podcast as well before, is this is probably the first game since this time last year arguably with the exception of the League Cup final, which is different in a sense. But this is the first game we've played them in a while now where you've maybe got something to prove. I think there's always been an aspect where, you know, do we switch off slightly because we didn't need to win? You know, if you look at the last few games when they've beat us and all the rest of it, it's partly because we've not needed to. You've not had anything to motivate you. Now, you can argue for Sunday. Maybe that still exists. You know, we're in this really unusual scenario. You know, the idea that you could go to Ibrox, lose, you know, only a few games, only, what, four games or whatever into the season, and you could feasibly still be 3 points clear, you know, before you've even reached September, is really weird. But I'm hoping that not so much the players, you know, feel guilty or think they owe anything. I'm hoping that they go in recognising, you know, we've got a real chance to, I mean, I know Paddy Power's paid out on us winning the league, and you absolutely don't win leagues in August. It sort of seems that some years with Rangers bad start, it seems that we can get earlier every year going, you know, well, you don't win leagues in December, you don't win leagues in November. Now we're in theory going, you don't win leagues in August. But I mean, the reality is, it's not a must-win game for us. I think that's the one advantage. Hopefully the players know they owe us something. Again, Rangers fans might say exactly the same thing, but we've not got that instant pressure. The absolute worst-case scenario is that at the end of Sunday, we are top of the league, 3 points clear. The absolute worst-case scenario for them is that, you know, they're 9 points clear in the relegation zone. And I know we're too early for anything like that, but... So the pressure's absolutely on them. And while Celtic supporters might be annoyed, you know, if this was at Celtic Park, for example, and we didn't win, then depending on how the transfers go the next week, it could have been a really toxic atmosphere. The reverse is the same. They have had, you know, a really dreadful start. Let's be honest. If we were to win well, there honestly is every chance that they would have to consider, that they would sack the manager. So it is huge at such an early stage for them. And that increases the pressure. And hopefully... that pressure being on them at the same time as Celtic, you know, recognising the need to atone will get us over the line. Although, I'll be brutally honest, I would take a draw now for the simple reason that if you'd offered me to be 6 points clear after going to Ibrox, I would have been absolutely delighted.
Yeah, I would probably take a draw. I mean, looking at it logically, Stevie, you shouldn't really be able to make a case for Rangers winning this game, but I don't want to fall into the same traps, because I think I've said this over the last 2 years and watched Rangers winning games. I thought that Celtic were so superior in every department that they couldn't lose. But and they still, whatever Celtic's flaws is, they're manifest, as Matthew says, but whatever Celtic's flaws, Rangers have them by the shed load. If Celtic have them by the bucket load, Rangers have them by the shed load. I mean, their poorest start to league season since 1989. What does it tell you about 1989, how bad Celtic were, that they went on to win the league pretty comfortably?
I have to say, that was my exact thought when I saw that stat as well, Andrew.
Yeah. It was my fault, because I just started at Celtic then. Blame me. You shouldn't really be able to make a case for anything other than a Celtic victory, but I've been stung. You know, my confidence has been eroded, especially in these games, by the last couple of years.
I don't know what's happened to us the last few games against them. I think the most recent games, we haven't started well. And we've already talked about the importance of the first goal. I think when Celtic get the first goal, it settles us down. Rangers need to come out. It gives us space to play in behind them. They, in the last couple of games, seem to have had the measure of us tactically. And I wonder if with a change of manager, now that they've got Russell Martin out, I've got to confess here, I don't know about you guys, I don't watch them. I can't watch them. So I haven't seen them this season other than wee basic highlights of their goals and stuff. So I'm not in a position to say tactically how Rangers have been playing, but I do hear that they're playing more football from the back because he's trying to encourage that. And it sounds as if it's a very similar style to what we've got. So I wonder somehow on Sunday if it will sort of cancel each other out in some ways, because they on the face of it don't seem to be as aggressive as they've been in the last few, certainly in the last season under Clement firstly, and then under Barry Ferguson. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of shape that Martin plays. He also is under a lot of pressure. I wonder if he's going to change. I wonder if he'll maybe look at the talk to his coaching staff and talk to the players and say, what did you do the last time that you beat Celtic? What did you do the time before that when you beat them convincingly? I mean, they gave us a doing it in January, which was a horrible experience. So, you know, a lot is up there. I think there's too much uncertainty to be able to actually make a proper prediction in how this is going to go.
Well, there's such an arrogance to Martin. He won't change it. He wouldn't. He wouldn't ask. Mm. How did he manage to get the job done against Celtic? Like the last couple of games, and they said, well, the last two home games anyway, you know, how did they manage to get the job done against Celtic? Like, because he only changes tactics for anything. And yes, they do. I watch them all the time, to be honest with you, any chance I get, because I'm always looking for them to lose, and it's always enjoyable, or not win. And there's been some enjoyable, but they're absolutely sixes and sevens. Mm. They're absolutely sixes. And they don't know how to play out from the back. They don't know how to play out whatever instructions he's given them. They don't seem to know how to play it. I mean, they're absolutely marshmallow soft. But have that kind of edge, you don't feel, in terms of to take advantage of that. You'd think if Maeda was Maeda of last season, you'd think that this high line they play, Maeda running in behind. That's what Bruges did the other night. Just simple ball, pew, in behind. But
it's not even Bruges. I think if you watch, I mean, if I don't really watch them, but I'll put on Sports Scene, you know, in terms of highlights and occasionally, and you watch the goals. Almost it feels like every time they've lost a goal this season, it's not quite, but, and certainly, you know, for example, the St Mirren opener, and to say nothing of the games, you know, against Bruges, but I think that's exactly it. You know, a Celtic team that is geared up, this should be the perfect team for us to play. They play high line, they will presumably press a bit. As I say, the number of goals they've lost so far were just balls are getting played through, the defence either, you know, it can't keep up for speed or just for organisation. Really, this could be a great day if we're right. And my one hope is that, I mean, what I'm really sort of gearing all my hopes to is this. You know, for example, the team, in fairness, we've been winning league games without necessarily playing brilliantly. Maeda obviously really hasn't come close to last season's form. Sometimes you do just get a game, you need a game where it all clicks. You know, if Dyson finally finds the form, you know, that he had last season, then he could have a great time on Sunday if they play that high line. Now, I think the challenge for Rangers is they've been playing a system that certainly, you know, isn't working. So on Sunday, what do you do? Well, you either revert to a previous system with new players where they've not played it at all, or you continue a system which really exposes you. And I think that suits Celtic either way, because, you know, you're either asking people to do something they're not used to, or you're continuing what you're doing that isn't actually working. Time will tell, though, I suppose, by the end of the game.
Of course. And what do you think of that, Ross, in terms of the stylistically, what we're going to see, if there is any style, but, you know, like, systemistically, I'm joking, like, in terms of the systems that both will deploy, don't tell us you're going to say, I don't watch them either.
I don't. I've said this to you multiple times. I have zero interest in that football club at all. So, obviously, the results will come through. Like, Stephen and Matthew, I'll watch highlights if they're on. But I will never, ever go out my way to watch them unless we're playing them. And even then, I find that kind of, you know, if we could have buried them all those years ago, I'd have quite happily seen that happen. I do not give one iota of a crap about that football team and never, ever will. But in terms of their style based on the highlights that I've seen and things like that, Matthew's right. They should be almost the perfect matchup for us. I don't think Russell Martin will change, because I think throughout his...
No, he's got that arrogant streak here.
Throughout his career, you know, he's done all his Sky interviews. He done it when he was at Southampton. He said, you have to stick by your core principles, because as soon as you move away from them, you're basically sending a message that you're weak to your players, and then how are you meant to get people to buy? Now, to be fair, people, we're referring to it as arrogance. Ange Postecoglou came in and done exactly that with us, but he just done it better.
Russell Martin is better players.
I think the problem that a lot of football teams have,
McGregor
and Rangers have it right now, is he's trying to do something where if you'd asked him a year ago when they had Clement and when they had Barry Ferguson and it was all going Pete Tong, they were all saying, we want a team who plays good football. Now he's come in and he's done it badly. There's no hiding for that. But he'd done it, the first game went by and they were already calling for his head. It's nothing to do with his tactics, it's him. They from the moment he came in, they already had it in their head, we don't like this guy, there's something about him that just doesn't click with us. And now he's tried to play a certain type of football, which does take time to build up, because you also need good players, and it's gone wrong. And they're going, we want someone who'll come in and make us this hard-to-beat team, and we want hard work in this, that, and rest. Well, hard there.
A Rangers man! Aye. A Rangers man!
No, but literally...
somebody like Walker! Do you know what gets me? As a vegan, I'm taking it very personally. How much battering... how much, kind of fried battering he's taken, for being a vegan. Mind you, he also gets battered because the shed and he's... the way his hairstyle is, so I don't take that personally, of course.
This is what I'm saying. All these things, the fans 3 months ago, and we want to play a nice style of football. We need a manager. You know, it was going to be David Ancelotti. He'll come in and he'll make us this lovely to watch team. Will he? Would he? With the players that they've got, I would suggest that's unlikely. And ultimately, the other part is we talk about managers having this core identity. People forget that clubs now ask for managers to have that sort of core belief. Clubs literally go and specifically handpick managers who play a certain type of football. So it's not just a manager that's saying, it's my way and only my way. Clubs are saying to managers, that's why we've picked you. We want you to do this. So, as I say, to go back to the start, because I've went off on one as per usual, I agree with Matthew. Stylistically, they should be perfect for us. However, I'll go back to the same point as made last podcast. Both teams have got a stinking amount of negativity about them. And so it is near impossible to say we're in a position where we can confidently go and deal with this game the way that normally we would expect to. Because I said at the end of last podcast, normally when we've taken a hit, this team have come back and hit harder. The last couple of weeks, and especially the qualification games, there's a real question over that. There's a real need. They've got credit in the bank for what's went on over the past year or so. But that credit is quickly disappearing. And so the one thing I disagree with Matthew is saying it's not a must-win game. It's a derby game. They're always must-win games. And the players need to have that in the head. Win this game, forget Rangers' position in the league. Hearts are only a couple of points behind us. Hearts win against Livingston on Saturday. They're top of the league. Your job is to make sure that you're the best team in Scotland. You need to go to Ibrox and win.
Stevie, what do you think in terms of team selection then? I would throw Balak Washer straight in. And if they get Dolberg over the line in the next few hours or next day or so, I would throw both of them. And that was that's what I loved about Postecoglou. He used to throw players straight in. And when you think about it, even if you look at the Rangers situation, your Ant-Man's played one good game, and it was the game where he played against Pilsen, and he'd never even had I think he'd maybe had one training session. He's never had another good performance. But remember, I think Janinho. Remember Janinho? Did he not just sign for Celtic and play against Rangers?
He got thrown in. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the only good game he played for Celtic, wasn't it?
I was going to say that, Andrew. I mean, I'm not too sure what lesson we get from there, because he was generally hopeless.
but he played well the first game. That's all you're looking for. Well, right now, this is what you're looking for in the immediate term. Hey, Stevie, would you play Balak Washer?
I would play both if we get him over the line. And the reason for that is we need a lift. We're in that position. We're in a wee rut at the moment, and we really need, even getting new signings onto the pitch, but we give the fans a lift. And if you hear Callum McGregor the other day there, that he says that obviously that they, from the point of view of the players, that they're looking for more quality coming as well, so it would probably give them a lift. And, you know, the big problem we've got is the front three, because it's, you know, last season with an embarrassment of riches. You had Kyogo, you had Jota, you had Maeda, you had Kun, all in top four, all in good form, certainly, and playing well. And you had Ida, who could come in, and to be fair, he did relatively well. But, you know, you look at it now, and you've got an aging James Forrest, you've got Yang, you've got Maeda, who's lost, certainly he's lost his confidence, he lost his mojo. You've got Ida, who isn't scoring goals. So in that front three, we need a lift getting into this game. And I would take a gamble with them. If they're good players, they should be able to play in any environment, and they should be able to come in and hit the ground running.
Yeah. What's your thought on that, Ross? We're presuming, well, we've got Balak Washer. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. I hope so. Does anybody get any better ideas than what I'm saying?
Well, I would call him Balak Washer, but, you know, until the commentary goes out, I don't think we'll be certain. Mm-hmm. Thoughts? I would like to see Balak Washer start. I don't think Dahlberg would be here in time. Because if he's not in Scotland tonight, then if he was to come tomorrow, by the time everything goes on, I don't expect to see Dahlberg in a lineup on Sunday. I think he will be if they get it done, Sunday night announcement or Monday announcement. Depending on how the result goes, it'll either be, here's an extra gift if we've won, and if it goes wrong, then it'll be, here's something to try and cheer you up. I actually think the biggest problem they might have with a selection on Sunday is the midfield, because it's not really worked particularly well up to now. I know Negrin's obviously got himself a couple of goals, but then we've been moving him up to the right wing to try that there, which he's not a right winger. I think if anybody's ever heard me say, he played on the right hand side of attack in Denmark, not as a winger. He was like a right forward, almost like an inside forward to the way Abada used to play, where it was his job was to get on the end of things in the box. He was a late box runner. He scored a lot of goals. So where, I don't know where you play him. And McGregor and Hatate's not been particularly good this season. And McGregor's not been very good, in fairness. So I don't know, is my honest answer
I was a Hatate fan, but I just think in this calendar year of 2025, he's contributed next to nothing. And I think he's a luxury player who we can ill afford these days. And I'm not a big fan of Engels either, but I would like to see Engels get a game, a run of games, in preference to Hatate, to see what he's made of.
I think, I don't know about you, Matthew, but I agree with two lads there. Like, I'd like to see him changing it to a 4-2-3-1, and you would play Engels in a deeper role, the double pivot with McGregor, because McGregor looks as if he's getting a little bit stretched in terms of the spaces. Then you play Negrin in front, and then you play Balak Washer right or left, and then either Forrester. Because he's supposed to be able to play off both wings, Balak Washer, Ross?
He can play across that attacking three. So he's played as a 10, he's played as a right winger, he's played on the left side. He generally prefers to play on the left so he can come in on his right, which is on trend with pretty much every wide player in world football just now, with the exception of probably James Forrest and a few others. Mm. But yeah, he can play across the three quite happily.
So you could play him left, you play Forrest right, and then, well, if you've not got Dahlberg and if he does, well, I suppose if Dahlberg's no there, then we're hearing that Ida won't be sold. So I don't know. Or do you play Shin? I don't know. What about you, Marty? What do you think?
I think it's difficult. It slightly depends on, you know, what we don't know is like what they're doing in training and what they've been sort of, you know, what plans they've had. I think if you look at our problem last season, if you leave the motivation issue that we've spoke about, I felt the sort of the problem last season was Rangers didn't really press their fullbacks forward, which really took our attacking, like our wingers, out of the game. They flooded the midfield a lot more than we did, and we couldn't really cope with that. And I think that's where, especially the likes of, you know, Maeda, are shown to be luxury players. Where, you know, if you are in a minority, which, you know, if you're playing a 4-3-3 and Rangers have got more in the midfield, then you are, you know, you actually need to sort of be fighting for it. And I don't think that's really Maeda's game. I think in terms of changing things around, I mean, I would like to see us change things around, but like I say, it depends training-wise what you've been doing. I don't think, you know, we've spoke about it in the context of Martin, but the reality is I don't think it's ever a great idea to go in, you know, to a challenging game, a place, you know, you don't generally have a brilliant record and say, let's do something really different. I think that's, you know, something that, you know, potentially all that then happens is you end up confused, you end up, you know, with players not quite knowing what the role is. I think to some extent, you know, the team on Sunday, to a large extent, partly, I mean, not even necessarily through deserving it in some of the cases, but simply, we know what the starting team mostly is going to be. You know, we know that the, you know, Tierney's obviously going to be fullback. You know, sort of Ralston, we've got Carter Vickers, we have got, you know, we've got Scales, we've got Schmeichel. I think that bit of it, unless something happens in the next day or so, you know, unless there's some sort of injury, I think that takes care of itself. McGregor hasn't had a great season, but he's definitely going to start. You know, there's no debate.
Can I make a wee point here? Is anybody else disturbed about Tierney? 5 games now, and he hasn't played longer than 65 minutes.
No, he played 74 the other night, right. Stevie, to be fair to him.
I'll rephrase it then. He hasn't played a full 90 minutes yet in 5 games. Now, I accept that he should be treated with kid gloves on because he's had injury problems in his career and all this. But if we're paying, I know that he came in a free, if we're paying the wages that we're rumoured to be paying him, and I mean, it doesn't matter what position it is or what player it is, if you've got a player that can't finish 90 minutes, quite frankly, he's not much good to you. And what
unless he's Tom Rogic. Unless he's the magic man, Tom Rogic. He used to only give you 60 minutes, but no. By God.
I think there's a fundamental difference between defenders and a player like Rogic. As a rule, you really shouldn't ever change your defence in a game unless for injury or unless you're completely altering the shape. I think that's maybe where there's a valid concern that it's reasonable to say we're going to take off a midfielder and we're going to bring on, you know, an attacking midfielder of Rogic's style. Whereas, you know, knowing that every single game, you know, on 65 minutes, let's average it, that you're going to take off your left back. A, it takes away an ability to make other changes. Mm-hmm. B, it allows teams to be very, you know, you've become predictable. Teams know, well, we know at this point you're going to make a change. We might keep a change, you know, until then we're going to attack you. So I think I think Stevie's right in the sense it's a concern. I don't think it's a surprise. You know, I mean, I really like Tierney. I think Tierney is, although I'm technically old enough to have gone to see Celtic, not that I remember it because of my age, you know, before Paul McStay's debut, I've no recollection given the very, very young age I was when McStay made his debut. But I really remember Tierney. And Tierney, in my memory lifetime of seeing Celtic, which is probably about, you know, 37, 38 years, Tierney's far and away the best young player we've had coming through. And I really, really like him. There is, though, a concern if you know that every single game you're going to have to take your left back off, you know, not for an occasional injury or not really for a tactical switch, but just because they can't manage it. That being said, in fairness to Tierney, that was us made that decision. You know, when we signed him, I don't think, you know, I think we knew what we were getting, which is why, you know, so many fans were concerned. I think regardless of that, though, like I say, if we go back to what the team's going to be, again, he's definitely going to play Maeda, he's definitely going to play McGregor, he's definitely going to play Negrin. I am guessing Forrest will play. I agree with the point. I can't see a player who's not in Scotland just now, you know, arriving tomorrow night and going straight in. I also don't know how fit he is. You know, I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure where his match fitness is at. So I think I certainly would play. And if we are agreeing amongst ourselves that, you know, the pronunciation is Balak Wisha, then I absolutely think he'll play. I think Maeda will play and I think Forrest will play. I think that will be the front three. I think the only question mark maybe is who your third midfielder is.
Does anybody else feel that, crazy as it may sound, that we're missing Taylor? And only for the reason why I say that is that Taylor playing that inverted role, which he did very well, very underrated, he gave us an extra player in midfield. He was a great help to McGregor in terms of just being... McGregor could play passes off him, if you like. You know, he was such a steady player. And I'm not doubting Tierney's ability for a minute. I think Tierney's a cracking player. But Tierney and Maeda seem to be running into each other up and down the left wing. They don't seem to have any understanding at the moment. That might come in the weeks ahead, the months ahead. But at the moment, there seems to be a wee bit of almost like, you know, they're not compatible on the left-hand side at this moment. And I think that's a bit of a worry. And I think Taylor, to a certain degree, has been a loss.
Yeah, maybe in that the midfield balance. But what I would say is Celtic have lost, conceded one goal, a wonder strike, Falkirk in five games. They've looked pretty solid defensively. Would we not agree, Ross?
Yeah, no real concerns defensively. Nothing that sort of jumps out. However, you would look and go, they've got away with a few across these games, you know. Carter Vickers has let a few wee things slide underneath his leg. There's been a few moments where it's the start of the season. It's going to happen. I'm not overly concerned about the defence versus Rangers. I think Matthew's right. That defence pretty much picks itself. I agree with Stephen. I said way, way back when we signed Kieran Tierney, there's a reason that Arsenal have let him go for free. And people can give it that, oh, he could have went to another English team, this, that, and the rest of that. We have signed a player that we do not, there's no way that they know that he is going to get to the level where he is going to be able to give out 40, 50 games a season. There's no way that they know that. And so the fact that they never dealt with that issue, and to be fair, they never dealt with the issue when Greg Taylor was here. We kept on putting a sticky plaster on it. It was Schloop, it was Burnaby, it was Laxalt way back when. This left back, yeah, Bolingoli, all these different players that we've had, we've always known that that left back area, there's always been one key guy, and if that one key guy gets injured, we've got a problem. Now, we've just sold Mitchell Frame to Aberdeen, so that's our youth left-back option gone. So what Matthew said is right. If you're Russell Martin and you're looking at Celtic at the weekend, you're looking at Kieran Tierney and you're going, 70, 75 minutes, we expect he's going to come off. So I am going to keep someone on the bench that I think is going to get the better of Liam Scales. And as soon as Tierney comes off and Scales moves over, I fancy that matchup on that side. Now, it might not work out, but it's literally, it's like telling someone one of your cards in your poker hand before you start placing down any chips. Because teams are looking and going, it's predictable.
But I think they're being cautious, and rightly so. And they're building up his fitness, as I say. He's gone for 16.
How long will it take, Andrew? Because, like, I mean, he's in the pre-season, and when you count the pre-season games, that must be six or seven games. Now, how long is it going to take to get his fitness up?
It might take a couple of months because he's not really played regularly for... Remember me and you did it, Ross? How many games was it? Was it the equivalent of 790 minutes or something the last year he played?
He's not played an average of over 45 minutes for a couple of years. But that's what I'm saying. I'm not having to go at Tierney for that. I'm having to go at Celtic for the fact that they had to have known this. And it's a whole strategic problem where they signed him away back. They've known since last January. Tierney's coming. At that point, they then go, we've got Taylor, we're going to make him a deal, or offer him a deal, but chances are you have to prepare for the fact that he might not accept that. And in the meantime, we've done nothing to prepare for the fact that we know we've got this player who's coming in, who we are going to have to manage for however long, and we don't have a backup option that the manager is comfortable with. Inamura had done all right there in the game the other week there against, who was it we played, Livingston.
Yeah.
But Rodgers has openly said, I don't fancy him there. Now, if he doesn't fancy him there for a game against Kaira Almaty, I ain't fancying him putting him in against Rangers. That's nothing against Inamura, but that's just going on what Rodgers is saying. So the fact that the club never dealt with this problem, and we still don't appear to be dealing with it because there's no sign of a left-back anywhere,
I thought the boy for Argentina could play both sides.
Oh, sorry. I'm forgetting about him.
Officially confirmed him.
I know he was at training today, so I am forgetting about
recording this.
But, yeah, so as we're recording this, he might have been given. I'm forgetting about Sorachi entirely. But the fact that even then, Sorachi has not kicked the ball since February, March. This is August. We're nearly in September, and we're bringing in a guy who's not kicked the ball in anger for 5-6 months. That's not good strategy. That's called stupidity.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, we know that. Look, but I mean, the one thing I would say is, like, you have to earn the side of caution with Tierney. And I know what you're saying, Stevie. It's like, how long is it going to take? It might take 3 or 4 months. You're trying to get Tierney back to some kind of shape. He's not going to play 40, 50 games. Chris Sutton never used to play 40, 50 games. I've probably said it on here before, but Martin O'Neill used to say, I'd rather have 25 games for Chris Sutton than 50 games for an average striker. Or, but that we also had Chris Sutton who could play centre-back and central midfield. Mm-hmm. Not always I felt the centre-back role, he covered himself in glory, but I mean, they just wanted to get him. Like, he was just obsessed. O'Neill was obsessed with getting him in the team. Now, our glorious leader isn't here tonight. And is he bailed? Because I've been getting these lurid texts with lurid rumours. Lurid rumours just before we come on air about the machinations behind the scenes. Is anybody hearing the same kind of things about Dermot Desmond demanded that Brendan Rodgers apologise to the board this week? He demanded he didn't do his Sky interview. Rodgers refused. Anybody be hearing all these things?
Not a thing.
Right. And there was the meeting. We did hear that ourselves. We did hear that within our chat about the all-day meeting, because Dermot Desmond's over in the country, probably with about 7 bodyguards or something, I would imagine, you know. But you'll not be able to see him at Ibrox in the director's box, because they'll be, you know, I mean, you know, like, remember Gaddafi? And he used, mind you, I don't think Dermot Desmond employed women, beautiful-looking women, but just, you know, like, maybe more... Gaddafi was the wrong choice. It was maybe more, I should say, Saddam Hussein. You know, you get the Praetorian guards around you, you know. I saw that a few times with Murray, actually, at Ibrox. Folk lunging for him and all that, and they had to do a circle of... it was hilarious. A circle of stewards around him and all that. But
Surely, given the normal colour scheme that you get at Ibrox, it would be more akin to the Swiss Guard, you know, with the blue and the orange and all the rest of it. That would be more likely on Sunday. I mean, everybody likes rumours, but they generally drive me mad. Because let's face it, I mean, like I'm sure everyone else, I am in multiple group chats, and every group chat is full of people who know. And it's half the time you're like, what you mean is that some guy you've never met on Twitter has told you something and you would quite like it to be true, so that's now the story. I think the honest answer is nobody's got any idea. I've heard, again, like you say, all my phone has done for the last 2 days, especially today, is buzz with, this is who we're signing, this is what we're signing, this has happened, this has been the arguments, this is this. And the honest answer is, I usually just put those chats on mute because I have absolutely no idea if it's true. And if I'm being completely honest, I think half the time the people that are saying it don't know if it's true either.
That's true. I mean, mine did come from a decent enough source, I would say. It's 4 degrees of separation or anything like that. It was a bit closer, but still some of it, even me reading it, I thought, I'm not sure if this is absolutely ginned up. But, I mean, all is not well in the state of Denmark. We know that. We know that behind the scenes. I mean, do you not think it was a wee bit cloying today when you hear Brendan Rodgers saying, these guys, this board of directors, what was his phrase? Was it they bleed Celtic dry? That's the
problem. You see, do you know, that always annoys me. You know, the sort of stuff. Look, I think there's, in some ways, I'm not about to defend the board here. You know, in many ways, quite the opposite. But, you know, the idea that there's a conspiracy and the boards are deliberately hurting us, the point I'm making is that the idea that they're doing that, or the idea that they're not genuine Celtic men, I'm absolutely sure they are. I just don't see that it's relevant. You know, I'm a genuine Celtic man, but I wouldn't play me at centre forward on Sunday, nor would I make me the chief executive, because it doesn't matter if you're a Celtic man or if you can do the job. And I think that's where the problem is. And with so many at the club, I think the big issue with the club in recent times is absolutely communication and silence. There is nobody that speaks for the club. I did read one thing, again, one of these rumours, who knows if it's true, that, you know, Desmond's vision was that in many ways the manager, so in this case Brendan Rodgers, should be the club spokesman, the one that speaks. And I think I sympathise with that to a point. I don't want somebody, you know, you don't want a Charles Green or something that almost thinks they are bigger than the club, that they are the show. But I think you do need people, if you want fans to be on board, where a lot of the anger this season has come from, is just a sort of sense of a lack of vision, a sense that there isn't anyone leading the club. You know, if the manager is the official spokesman, well, the manager is literally counting down the months. Now, he may yet extend his contract, but, you know, this time next year, the current manager will not be the manager if you base it on, you know, the actual contract. So to not have somebody who is a sort of figurehead, who almost Fergus McCann-like, gives an idea of what the general plan and the strategy is, I think that's what creates the vacuum, that the minute you have a result goes against you, the minute you have something that angers the fans, then blows up into something much bigger. So, as I say, this whole idea, I know I've read the Rodgers thing, you know, about the bleed selling. Do you know what? I honestly believe they do. But then I also think that was true of the old board, if we go back to the 90s, and nobody wanted them to stay either.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, this whole idea, you need fans on the board. They are fans. They are fans. But once you become a board member, you're not the same fan as you were before. I used to have an argument with colleagues, I'll not name them or whatever, and I used to say, one of them used to say to me, we were working on club publications, and I used to say, we've got to get this right. We've got to get this right. And and I said, and I don't believe we should be doing what they want us to do, with certain sort of one thing or another. And he said, my colleague would say, no, I'm a Celtic fan first and a journalist second. I said, no, that's not the way I see it. I'm employed as a journalist. I'm a journalist first and a Celtic fan second. You know, and once you come on the board, right, you could, if you're a Celtic Trust or whatever, yeah, you're a fan because you're not in the Celtic Trust. But say they elevated one of the Celtic Trust to the board, then they'd become a board member who happened to be a Celtic fan rather than a Celtic fan on the board. It automatically changes, you know, wherever you are, whatever your job is, whatever your role is within the club. Davey, what do you see that?
I agree with what Matthew was saying there. I think the big problem we've got is lack of communication, and you've got a chief executive there who clearly isn't happy in the spotlight. Now, I don't expect him to come out once a month and you know, I think in the opposite effect, Lowell loved himself and was never out the papers, never out the media, and that in the other extreme is a pain as well. But I think the thing about Nicholson is, you know, he is in that role. He's paid to do that role. And during a time of crisis, and I think we're in a wee bit of crisis here, might sound a bit daft, but we've just went out the Champions League and the fans want to hear what the plan is. You know, what's the board's strategy for moving ahead? And it would really be helpful if Nicholson would just come and even if it was one of the video things that he did for Celtic TV that comes out to everybody by email and say, listen, we are dead frustrated as well. We've tried really hard to get players. We don't want to make it public, and we're trying to do our business privately. But we can assure the fans that we're doing everything possible. That in itself assures everybody and gives you that assurance that things are being done properly. But to not say anything throughout the summer when we weren't signing players and the fans were getting upset, and then we get beat by Kyra and to not say anything. There has to be leadership. And the manager should comment on the team and the results, certainly. But the chief executive's got a duty to comment on the running of the club and the state of the club is. And that's a dereliction of duty. Nicholson, and all the time he's been there, just doesn't have any presence.
No, it's just not him. I mean, we know your thoughts on this, Ross. I mean, yeah, and you know that I kind of disagree in the sense of, if they came out and gave that statement that Stevie did, and it could be genuine, coming right to the heart, we have tried like bears to get, well, no like bears, like especially no Brontë bear. We have tried like lions. We've tried like lions to get players in, and it just hasn't happened for us. Actually, the same source tonight told me that they're absolutely bailing the board about the way they've been led a merry dance by players' agents this summer. They're really hacked off the way they've been treated by players' agents. But which I said back to the guy.
An excuse.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what he said. He was the same guy that said.
No, no. I'm saying, for their point of view, always an excuse. It's always an agent. It's always something else.
And
always an excuse.
We've gone a bit over, so enjoy the rest of this thing.
Listen,
okay?
Matthew, before you go. Okay.
Thanks very much for coming on. Matthew had to go, but it's been great to see you.
You too. And I hope your team wins on Sunday.
Matthew, sorry, before you go, can you give us one more minute?
1 minute.
Please, just before Matthew goes, because we've had the Europa League draw today, are you happy with it before you go? Because that's probably, you know, the biggest thing next.
I think it's an interesting draw. You know, I think you're playing some teams that you haven't played before, which, you know, I think is always interesting. It strikes me as it's, you know, we're all a bit annoyed. Well, we're obviously all angry after midweek. There's been that sort of sense of malaise since the start of the season. I think it's this weird draw where I have the idea we're either going to win the group and everyone's going to just be absolutely delighted because things have gone there, or, you know, it's just going to be, oh, this is just yet another, I wish we'd just not even gone into Europa because we have a disaster. I'd like to think, I mean, at the end of the day, if you can qualify out your Champions League group, in theory, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to do it out your Europa group. There's some tricky games. I think, bizarrely, I think there's arguably more tricky games than there was last year, which doesn't entirely bode well. But we'll wait and see. It depends when they eventually decide the dates. I know some dates are doing the rounds suggested, but I think that'll give us some idea about whether we might perform well as well, but hopefully it turns out to be better. I think it's interesting from the perspective of playing teams we maybe haven't played before, but I do have this idea that it's going to be either feast or famine, and hopefully it's the former rather than the latter. Anyway, enjoy the rest of your night, boys.
Cheers,
and you, and you. And Ross, what's your thoughts on the draw? We'll move on to that then. I cannot even remember what I was saying. I know I'll get stick for this if anybody watches it, because we cut off mid-story. But
that's right. Sorry, that's my fault. Sorry, I'm stealing your duties for a second.
Oh, no, you were right to do so, but I will finish that story in the sense that, so the guy said, they're bailing about the way they've been messed about by agents. I said, well, that's why you need somebody who can mess agents about as much as they would mess you about. That's why you need a director of football, a sporting director who's used to, who embraced that world. They don't come from that world where you're dealing with agents, where you're almost, you can be as sharp as them. You can have the same sharp practices as they do. Mm-hmm. They're coming to their accountants and their lawyers, and as Brian has always gone on about, you know. So that was my answer to him. By the way, it wasn't, I was accepting the excuse.
No, I was the aiming at you. I mean, as in the board, in my mind, I've always got, there's always an excuse. Instead, it's a bit like the article went up today. To me, accountability at Celtic is dead. It doesn't exist because they're either hiding or they're blaming someone else. And it's the Spider-Man meme where everybody's pointing at other different, directions. You need a good relationship with agents. You don't have to like them, but you need to have, you know, some kind of positive relationship with them where there's an acceptance that everybody's trying to get what they want. And sometimes you need to be able to give something that is just uncomfortable enough to be comfortable. So I'm going to have to give you something that I didn't particularly want to give you. But in the grand scheme of things, if I get what I want on the end of it, I just have to accept that wee thing that I wasn't so keen to give, which might be an extra $5,000 a week, or it might be, you know, a release clause or whatever it is. It's just, you're never going to get it exactly as you want it. That's just not the nature of football these days. And, you know, I have to speak to agents from time to time. Thankfully, I get to pass it off to someone at Steny who is very good at dealing with agents and has good relationships with them, which is hilarious given the fact that I think my boss at Steny is probably more capable than anybody I've heard at Celtic at managing those relationships, albeit on a smaller scale, because he accepts the fact that you're not always going to get what you want. However, if you've got a good relationship, you then don't mess each other about, because nobody wins when they mess each other about. The Celtic board have created that environment for themselves by the fact that, much like Brian has always pointed out, we're trying to come out looking like Billy Big Bollocks because we got everything we wanted and you didn't, you know, you had to give up all the chips just so your player could sign for Celtic or whatever it may be. The Jacob Braham one for Go Ahead Eagles is one of the most hilarious ones I've ever seen. we're going to offer you $1.5 million. He's worth five. We'll offer you $1.7 million. He's worth five. Like that balance. Now, we don't know if that's exactly true, but the fact that the chief exec of Go Ahead came out and said that, and the fact that we've had the history of other executives coming out and saying these things about our club, eventually you have to go, this isn't just an unusual scenario where we've been a bit cheeky. This is a common theme. And again, we have to go with what, you know, Brian's told us and various other people have told us. It is a common theme. I don't have an issue. And as I say, I'm not going to go on a rant about Nicholson, but I think the thing that tells me that there's a problem with the board, and I've hammered on about communication, is when you have Brendan Rodgers sat in a press conference and they ask him a question and he says, I can't give you the answer. The questions that he's been asked are not, you know, they're not trade secrets. It's not, you know, it's not under lock and key. Someone should be able to give that answer. So if Brendan Rodgers can't give that answer, there should be someone else within the club who can. But the problem is we see it. It's Brendan Rodgers, and then that's it. There's no Paul Tisdale. There's no Michael Nicholson. There's no who. There's no person. It doesn't have to be Nicholson, but there should be someone above Brendan Rodgers that should be able to come out and say, much like Stephen said, this is what we're trying to do this summer. This is what we're aiming to do. It might work. It might not. But this is our intention. And it's not going to happen.
It's all because, but that. It's Dermot Desmond that's calling the shots, and he'll never come out and say anything. So that's the dysfunctionality for me, that it can all be traced back, as Brian says, and we've said it on these pods 100 times. Unless Dermot Desmond either is the leopard that changes his spots, or he changes the interest that he has in Celtic to be zero and pass, like, sell on his shares, you're going to be stuck with this. I don't think anybody's going to batter like Dermot Desmond over the head and say, by the way, strategically, this club has to change course. Because he just wouldn't listen. A 74-year-old man won't listen. He won't. A 74-year-old man worth $2 billion won't listen.
See, he might not, but ultimately, we still have to demand that accountability exists. And at the moment, it doesn't. Until it does, you know, it might be banging our head off a brick door, but it still needs to be demanded at every given opportunity, whether it's AGMs, whether it's fan forums.
Oh, definitely.
That's my favourite example. The fan forum thing, the last update on the Celtic website from a fan forum, bear in mind we know that there have been some since, was from last year. So they can't even communicate in that way. So to me, as I say, I'll end up repeating myself from now until forever. Until they start delivering some sort of clear communication and start making it us aware as to who is accountable for certain situations, then, you know, I'm just going to keep on pounding that drum, and it'll give me a sore head. It'll give everybody a sore head. But as was. Anyway, Europa League draw.
But by the way, keep pounding away. It's the same way... Gaza, it's the same way. I go to Fast Lane and stand there. I don't get rid of nuclear weapons, but I'm not going to stop trying. I go to Dungavel and try to say we should end this inhumane practice of detention, the only country in Europe that like operates unlimited detention. I don't change the world, but you got to keep trying. So I'm with you, Ross, all the way, man. I'll bang that drum with you. Keep at it. And especially, but the AGM, it has to be a concerted attempt to really give it them at tight at the AGM. But anyway, but we'll move on and say, Stevie, what did you make of the Europa League draw?
I'm going to spit my dummy out here and say it had very little interest in it. I was so disgusted Tuesday night because I was at work today. I had a meeting in Edinburgh, and normally when I'm at work, I would keep the phone on and I would be... You know, you'd be counting the teams, first team, second team, third team. And really, when I came out of the meeting, I didn't even check my phone until I was going back in the train. And you know, who we've got, that's it. But the worst thing about it is, and I made the point the other day before we played Kairat, I hate Sunday games. Games on a Sunday, particularly after the Champions League Thursday night, are just non-events. The atmosphere is awful. The attendance is reduced. And it's just a soul-destroying experience. And the thought of having 8 of those games, 4 at home and home, that maybe the away ones will not be too bad because
The
four home games are just going to be turgid affairs, and even the fact that we're rushing out buying Ballycrusher, whatever his name is, and the guy from Anderlecht and the South American fullback, too little too late. I find it insulting. This should all have been done 2 months ago. And the point I would make as well is Kuhn should never have been let go until we had a replacement. Now, but whether Kuhn went at the beginning of the window or at the end of the window, it wouldn't have made any difference to him, really, as long as he could have assured them, you can go when we get a replacement. He should never have been allowed to leave without getting a sufficient replacement in. And it's another indication of how badly the club has been run at the moment.
Yeah. No, I can't disagree with any of that. You know, you should backfill them almost. You know, you should hit the player in before you allow the player to go. But they've got. I don't know. They're obsessed about squad numbers and say the player then isn't sold and you've got too bloated a squad. If you do it right, you'll be able to sell players that people want for 17 million. Mm-hmm. Even Rangers have managed to flog Igamani. Not mm-hmm. for the 17 million they said they were holding out for, but for about half of that. There you go. But I'm the only one here then. Celtic, watching Celtic in Europe, and like Celtic under the lights, and some interesting teams that are crossing Celtic's path. You know what else I like? I like the fact that both Celtic and Rangers got Roma and Sturm Graz. Both of them have got those two teams, haven't they? Yeah. So it's quite funny. So then you're really going to see them because they're playing the same teams. You know, it'll be quite amusing. It's not an easy draw, mind you. I could see it going, I'm like Matthew, I could see it going pretty wrong. But then, you know, 5 weeks down the line, sometimes what you think the team is now and what the team could be in 5 weeks, even with three new starters, especially with three new starters.
I just don't see us beating anybody in current form. We are so devoid of confidence. That was...
I feel a bit like that.
That was 220 minutes we played against a team of... And I don't want to be demeaning here because I respect them in full because they stuck to their tactics and they overcame us. But they were one of the most mediocre European sides that I've ever had the misfortune to watch in all the years and we're going to European games.
There were spoilers.
20 minutes and we couldn't get a goal.
I know, there were spoilers, but they were great at it. And they were, you know, I mean, they were dogged, unbelievably dogged, but that shouldn't mean a thing. We've seen plenty of Scottish teams that have been dogged against Celtic and stuck to their task as they're losing 5-0 and 6-0. You know, but Celtic had no imagination, no ingenuity, no pace, no drive. That which suggests there's something underlying which could carry on into a really kind of insipid Europa League campaign. But hey, happy Friday night, people, cheery people that we are. Like, on that note, unless you get anything to add, Ross, what's your thoughts?
I'm with Stephen in the sense of Champions League is where you want to be. It's where you want to be. We made a mess of it. There's no point in going over it time and time again. The Europa League draw is good in the sense of what Matthew said. There's some interesting teams. A lot of these teams, you know, it's not the same old. We've got some teams like Roma that you would know better than me. Last time we played Roma, I don't remember us playing Roma in my lifetime. So
played them in a friendly in 1997 at Parkhead.
That's what I was thinking. I remember that friendly. What was it? Can you remember how that friendly panned out?
I think Hendrick scored the winner with a header. No, sorry. No, that was the night that Hendrick was introduced to the crowd at half time and Andy Tom scored the winner with a header. That's what it was.
Right.
Well, not played them competitively in my lifetime, right, then. That is in my lifetime.
Andy Tom. Never played them competitively. I don't think they've played many of these teams competitively, have they, Stevie? Red Star Belgrade.
Red Star going back to 68 is a famous one with Jinky. I think that's that will make headlines when we play them. Yeah.
And we've got Roma. We've got Feyenoord, who obviously are a team that we should know relatively well. Sporting Braga, Portugal. Ravenna, Zvezda, as they're known nowadays, Stumgras, Midtjylland, Utrecht, and Bologna.
They've played Midtjylland and Utrecht in recent years.
Utrecht gave us a spoon, by the way. That was another embarrassment. We were 2-0 up for the first leg. And a guy, you'll remember, Andrew, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Van
Wolfswinkel.
Ricky Van Wolfswinkel. Even I know who he is.
Yeah. They were diabolical that night, Celtic. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing new under the sun.
The one thing I would say is it's interesting teams. It's a bit different. Before yous came on, or while yous were having your technical difficulties early on, Matthew and I discussed the straw actually quite a bit at length, because I'd done a wee bit of homework before I came on. So I was looking at each team, how they set up, what business they've done this summer, how they've started the season. Most of them are only a game or two in the season. So like Roma have won their first game, which was, funnily enough, against Bologna. So Roma are 1-0 and Bologna are 0-1. Feyenoord have started their season, but they're only two games. They've got Robin van Persie as the manager now, who went in sort of halfway through last season. The one thing that I said to Matthew is, if you look through all these teams, ourselves included, and I would say Stumgras are the only two teams that I would say, if you looked at our recruitment over the summer, have not made significant moves to change our first team in a positive fashion. Midtjylland have added some experience. They've spent a bit of money. I don't think they're the greatest team in the world, but you know, they have tried to fill in some of the gaps that they've got. So they've got some very good promising young players. So they've went and spent the best part of €10 million on two more experienced guys for the spine of their team, who will be starters. Utrecht picked up guys that they had had on loan for last season. They picked up Sebastian Haller, who's been at a lot of good teams for free.
Yeah.
Bologna have spent the best part of €18 million just on two centre-halves. Even Red Star have bought a couple of players. They bought a midfielder, not for a huge amount of money, but you know, a good promising young midfielder. Utrecht have got Barkas in goals, who will no doubt have an absolute world day against us. Braga have spent good money on young players.
Well, they've got themselves nice new striker. Sorry to interrupt you. See, when you mentioned Barkas there, somebody sent me a text this afternoon and it was capital letters Barkas, and for the life of me, I didn't have a clue what he meant. When it passed, and now you've just explained what it means.
So
it was worth coming on, Stevie.
Just to find that out, that's brilliant.
Well, don't forget, there's also Lager Bielka, who signed for Braga, so he will...
So this is the level of these teams, guys that couldn't get a hearing at Celtic.
Well, you know, it's Barkas before he came to us at AEK. I don't think anybody could have predicted Barkas would be as bad as he is. Since he's went Utrecht, he's actually done all right. Lager Bielka never really got much a chance. And as I say, it's not a bad player. I think it was decent player, wrong team, wrong fit. But that would be my... I don't think you ever really know how it's going to pan out, because, one, you don't know what the fixtures look like. You also don't know what happens in between until you get to a fixture. So some teams' form will drop off, some teams' form will improve. But when you're looking at what these teams have done this summer, as I say, with the exception of Stumgras, most of them have looked to push on from where they were last season. Feyenoord have spent... They've made a lot of money coming in, but they've spent it. They spent £10 million on a guy called Semi Steen, who'd been at another Dutch team, goal scorer midfielder. He's their captain this season. So, you know, that's the level that these teams are looking to do.
Yeah.
What we, in my opinion, should also have been doing. But all these teams are looking to push on. Braga have picked up a manager who they had got from, he was one of the coaches at Man City. He's only been there, I think he's only maybe managed for about 9 games, end of last season, start of this season. But he's made really positive impressions. Their recruitment looks good. You might not like Lager Bielka, but you know, they've signed a guy, Dorgelis, who was in Denmark, really good midfielder, loads of energy. Pau Victor for Barcelona, young striker, very quick press as well. A couple of experienced guys like Grilich, who had been in Germany, who is an Austrian international. So none of these games I'm looking at and thinking, there's a gimme.
I know.
But but you've got to hope that the home games, more than anything else, are the ones that we make count. And that between now and Monday, the board get the finger out and go and do the work that should have been done 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Yep. Or 3 months ago, or even back in January, some of it. Mm-hmm. Back in January. Yeah. Or the year before, or the season before, because the team's been corroding. It's been corroding, and we've just been unaware of it in some ways, or maybe some of us are naive. I know other people have maybe seen it, but now you really do fear that there's no one part of the team. Although the defence has been functioning well enough, you'd still want that upholstered. You'd want the midfield. There'll no be a midfielder, I wouldn't imagine, before now and the close of the window. And as we know, it's the poorest front third since the 1990s, as we've said on here plenty. But hey, enough of all that. Happy, jolly. Let's what a great new season, guys! Hey, look forward to seeing so much more of these.
I'll end up, these will be hopefully good benchmark tests for whatever happens over the coming days and this season, because if we want to move forward as a club, these are the sort of teams that we need to be able to compete against, because a lot of these teams are good enough to be Champions League level teams.
Yeah.
And so if we do well in this, hopefully that will be a boost that'll take us on into next season and whatever that holds. Hopefully there will be lessons learned. I feel like I'm being stupid saying that, but I hope there will be lessons learned. And hopefully we will have something positive to talk about when we do our Monday night podcast, which will be the end of the transfer window and the review of Sunday.
Mm. Oh, my word. You are welcome to that one, because I'm actually out on Monday because it's my 58th birthday. So, like Celtic, they've done pretty well and given me a kind of a wee derby kind of streamer kind of thing. So, when it tends to fall on my birthday, like, They've tended to win them of recent times. The 4-0 game, the 2-0 game, if you remember, Johnny Hayes.
Let's hope that's an omen then.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. So fingers crossed, guys, right? God bless you. Good night.
Before we go, in advance, happy birthday on behalf of all of us. When it comes, just in case don't get a chance to speak to you.
You're catching up with me.
I'm catching up with you, Stevie. Aye, a couple of years.
Aye.
God bless you, right? Take care now, guys, right?
See you. Good night.
Thanks for your time, and thanks very much for everybody who's still here. Thank you. Right, take care.
Thanks for downloading and listening to this podcast. However, if you are a paid subscriber, keep listening. There's more of the podcast left.
In your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me